acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 49, Putting Food By, Friday, August 8th, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, recording from Yinhu Chaoyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate, and you can listen to the Yarns at Yinhu podcast on the website and on iTunes. This week's episode includes the following segments: The Back Porch, Yarn Lover at Large, and Ever Expanding Skill Set. Before I get started on the regular segments, I have a couple of announcements. The first is that the winner of the pattern prize for July Bulk Bins Cook Along is post number 23, Kunstknit, who is Karen, and she wins for her post about Italian-style quinoa. Thanks, Karen, and please get in touch with me, letting me know which pattern you would like to receive via Ravelry. Thank you to everyone who posted great recipes and inspiring photos of things they were cooking during the July Bulk Bins Cook Along for quinoa. The Bulk Bins Cook Along continues in August, and the ingredient in the spotlight is nuts. There are lots of varieties of nuts available in the bulk bins in my local health food store. And there's also a selection of nut butters that you can have fresh ground and you can buy in bulk as well. So I look forward to your posts in August about nuts. And a little bit later in the program, I also have a recipe recommendation that I have made this week. The Asymmetrical, the Asymmetrical Craft Along, began on August 1st. There's already a great deal of chatter in the chatter thread, a lot of folks participating. We have until September 26th, though it is not too late to get started with an asymmetrical pattern now. There's even a post of a finished project on the finished object thread. Smith MKS Margie completed her Color Me In shawl by Simone Eich of Wolverk Designs. Listeners have donated some very nice prizes for finished objects in this craft along, and I'd like to list them all. There are photographs of nearly everything on the finished object thread in Ravelry. So if you'd like to see the prizes, you can check them out there. But I'd like to thank these generous listeners for sending in prizes, and I've contributed a few of my own as well. So in no particular order, there is a skein of fingering weight yarn from Patrizia of BZB Fibers. There is a recycled, I suppose it's upcycled, large, very large tote from Maggie of maggiescorner.org. This is a beautiful, durable tote. Right now, it's holding all of the other prizes. And some very lucky person will be winning that prize. Sherry of Spinners and Farm has contributed a set of beautiful bamboo crochet hooks and an extraordinary set of bamboo needles as well. Something I haven't picked up yet is a skein of yarn from Zen Yarn Garden. This is coming from Conversational Threads in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. I need to make a trip out there to pick that up and do a little bit of shopping. So I'll be doing that sometime in August or early September. I've contributed a set of Rolags. I've been practicing on my blending board, and I put together a small set of Rolags for someone who might like to try their hand at spinning Rolags. And also, I found out about, I think it was the anniversary sale of Tatley, who makes temporary tattoos, and they had a 50% off everything sale that was running for a while. So there is a pair of happiness tattoos from Tatley. So you and a friend can wear happiness tattoos. There is excellent chatter going on in the Asymmetrical thread. So if you haven't already, I hope you join in. And please tag your projects on Ravelry and on social media with YAYH Asymmetrical. And that's yarns at Yinhu Asymmetrical. The back porch. Since I recorded episode 48, I really needed to kick things into high gear if I were to make any sort of progress toward winning at Stash Dash. This is kind of a self-imposed competition that takes place over the summer, sponsored by the Knit Girls, Laura and Leslie, to knit, crochet, weave, spin the equivalent of a 5K of yarn within a certain time period. I thought for some reason that this Stash Dash wrapped up in mid-August. I don't know why, but it turns out that August 7th was the final day. I think I had figured that out just before recording last, and in order to use significant amounts of yardage, I needed to turn to weaving. Weaving uses a lot of yardage, and after getting my loom warped, it's a pretty rapid process. I had a warped loom that was sitting around since fall, and I had some commercial sock yarn, black sock yarn, ready to go, and I decided to use some handspun from a crazy bat with lots of different kinds of fibers that I spun in the fall, specifically with the idea that I would use that yarn for weaving. It was really nice to weave with handspun, and I think that's a foolproof technique, as far as I'm concerned, is to use commercial black fingering weight yarn to warp the loom, and then to use a thick and thin, lots of color, lots of texture, single ply handspun to do the weaving. This scarf came out very well. I was pleased, and so I thought, well, I'll just get right back into it and warp the loom again. I chose to use as my warp a skein of Mill Ends yarn from Socks That Rock in the Rare Gems colorway. I was attempting to get this fascinating pooling to happen, and it looks like the scarf is kind of a watercolor. I'm not sure if it was partly the fact that a Mill Ends skein of yarn might not have the same color repeats as a regular skein, or if it had to do somewhat with my lack of experience in warping the loom. But I got very interesting color to happen in the warp, but it was not the effect that I was striving for. Nevertheless, I finished the warp and started weaving and came up with another beautiful scarf. I think this one has been claimed by mom, and it's over 100 inches long. It's really beautiful. after soaking and drying, it's just really nice and soft and beautiful. Using the Socks That Rock as the warp for a weaving project is certainly something I would try again. In fact, Samuel was very interested in the final product, and even though rare gems are not at all his colors, he suggested that maybe a more masculine skein of the same kind of yarn and a very soft cashmere or alpaca might be something that he would like and that he would wear. So I'm contemplating that as a holiday gift for Samuel. And as I was thinking about it a little more carefully, I remembered that I still have quite a bit of yarn left over from the cowl that I made him last year. That might serve as a nice weft. It would make things very soft, and the blacks and grays, I think, would give a muted effect. So this is certainly a kind of project I would like to try again. Right now, the loom is sitting empty, and I was able, with those two projects, to complete my Stash Dash goals. I had also begun my own project for the Asymmetrical, and that is Tiffany, a pattern by Simone of Woolwork Designs. And I was using some scrap stash yarn for that project. Tiffany is inspired by Tiffany Glass, I believe, and the pattern has a stained glass effect. I decided to take a chance on colors and combine something that I wouldn't normally think to combine. My inspiration for this was looking at a number of the completed Tiffany shawls on Ravelry, and there were some color combinations that I never would have chosen and that I didn't think would be really beautiful at all, but they worked very well. So I decided to try that myself, and I also thought about using some yarn that was a little more spring and summer, early fall weight, something that wasn't quite so heavy or warm. I chose to use a leftover yarn from a crochet project. It's Rowan Organic DK, and it's 50% cotton, 50% wool. And I paired that with Noro Tayo sock, which is 50% cotton, and then I think there's some wool and silk and maybe nylon content as well. Using a peony, a pink-purple color, as the neutral frame color for this Tiffany shawl was a really big risk for me. And then combining that with the Noro colors, and some things always turn up in that color scheme that you don't expect. I had some reds and reddish browns in there, and that is not something that I think coordinates well with pink or purple. But it worked. And I was so addicted to Simone's shawl pattern because I kept wanting to see how the colors would be working together and how it would turn out. Simone calls for a sport weight or a slightly heavier fingering weight for the framing yarn. And because I was using that DK weight, I was not able to complete that many repeats of the pattern. This is more like a scarf than a shawl, but it came out really well. Initially, I thought this is something that I would be giving as a gift, but now that I've completed the project, I have to say, I think I want to keep it for my own, and it's certainly a pattern that I would like to try again with vastly different colors, and maybe even a great way to use up some scrap and leftover yarn just to see how things turn out. So that pattern again is Tiffany. It's a shawl by Simone Eich of Vorwerk Designs. And it's a terrific pattern for the asymmetrical craft along that's going on right now. So if you've been thinking about joining in, but you weren't sure about a pattern, check out Tiffany. It's a great choice. Two more things I want to mention about Tiffany and my completed project. One is that I turned to the German short row technique using double stitch, which I do for almost any pattern that employs short rows. And the second is that I doubled the amount of pattern I was doing with the Noro because I knew I was going to come up a little bit short on the frame color because I was using heavier weight yarn than what was called for in the pattern. And I wanted the project to be substantial, so I decided to double up on a part of the pattern. All of the details for doubling up and for using the German short row technique are on my pattern page in Ravelry. In total, I achieved 6,037 yards for Stash Dash. It is a great incentive program for going through Stash, for using scrap yarn, for just pushing yourself to accomplish more with your crafting than you might otherwise do. And looking at the projects on the Knit Girls Ravelry thread is so overwhelming and inspiring. Just to see how much everyone is producing this summer and how busy everyone is and how proud they are of all the projects has been really a lot of fun. So I'd like to thank the Knit Girls very much for offering up this challenge. And to everyone who has won at Stash Dash, congratulations on meeting your goals. Have you been to your local agricultural or 4-H fair this summer? Samuel and I attended the Warren County Fair. That's a New Jersey fair within the last week or so. And we attended on Farmer Day. So there were a lot of activities specifically related to farms and farming. We visited all of the animals and we went to the tractor pull in the evening. We ate some fantastic pierogies, some of the best I've ever had. They were so good. The fairgrounds of the Hunterdon County Fair, where I remember attending the fair each year just before school started, is now a series of strip malls and parking lots. Very disappointing. But the fairgrounds have moved further down the road to Ringgoes, New Jersey. And I found out a couple of years ago that not only do they host the regular 4-H and agricultural fair, but they are also the site for a New Jersey sheep and fiber festival. This festival is one that I haven't attended yet, and that is because the weekend it runs is the weekend of the Jazz Festival here in Delaware Water Gap, and that's one of my favorite things to do all year. But this time I've decided to figure out a way to attend both of those amazing events. And I was scouting out the New Jersey Sheep and Fiber Festival online. They have an excellent collection of vendors, and they also have a button for getting involved. It turns out that they need quite a few volunteers still. So I sent an email, and I will be judging all of the fleeces for the show. No, I will be volunteering in the fleece tent. Probably I will be some kind of a runner, or I will be entering things onto a computer or into a notebook or something like that. But I hope to learn a lot My only other experience in a fleece tent was at Maryland Sheep and Wool this spring with Sarah Hunt of the Fiber Trek podcast as my guide. I learned a great deal from Sarah, and I'm eager to experience that again and get to know some of the local fleeces and the farmers of those flocks who are local to me here in this part of the country. To meet people and see how this whole process works. So, my contribution will be starting very early on Saturday morning, September 6th. If you will be attending the New Jersey Sheep and Fiber Festival, I hope you will contact me and maybe stop by and see me on Saturday morning. And after that, I will have some time to shop and meet some of the vendors. Most of the folks at this rather small event, this is certainly not on the scale of Rhinebeck or Maryland Sheep and Wool or anything like that, but there's quite a nice list of vendors. Most of them are from New Jersey and Pennsylvania. One in particular is Betty of the Spinnery, and Betty is my spinning teacher. And I know a little bit about her booth because she was talking about what she does when I was visiting the shop a while back. And also, the Jacob Sheep Breeders Association will be there. I stopped by their booth in Maryland, so I'm excited about seeing them. And they have, I know there's a Jacob Sheep farm in Jenny Jump, which is, I believe, in Warren County. I did not see them at the Warren County Fair, though, so I'm hoping to see them in Hunterdon County. And there were a few out-of-state vendors as well, including String Theory, Verdant Griffin will be there, and also Wandering Wool. So I think this will be a really fun time, and I'm looking forward to the New Jersey Sheep and Wool Festival. It's sponsored by the Garden State Sheep Breeders, and it takes place September 6th and 7th, Saturday and Sunday, at the Hunterdon County Fairgrounds in Ringgoes, New Jersey. Ever expanding skill set. August is the month for nuts in the Bulk Bins cook along. So I've started a new thread on the Ravelry board to post recipe ideas or your photographs of cooking with nuts. And as always, you can use hashtag BulkBinsCAL for social media and inspire others with your creations and your sense of improvisation. If you are the culinary type and if you like experimenting with new ingredients and local fare, you really need to stop by the Ravelry board of Knit Spin Farm and make some posts in Joanna Springs' Eat Along thread. She is offering up prizes if you eat a local ingredient or other prizes if you create a meal from, I think, 80-85% local ingredients and you really just employ a range of things into your cooking and your meal planning. It is such an awesome concept, and I really enjoy reading about and looking at things that people are making from their local ingredients around the country and around the world. It's so much fun. And I really wanted to support Joanna in her endeavor. So when I was making that Tatley order, there was a collection of 8 vegetable tattoos. So I contacted Joanna and let her know that I was offering that up as a prize for her eat along. These tattoos came in the mail this week and they are so cool. You really want to win them. So you really want to go over and make a post to the eat along thread and think about incorporating local ingredients into your meal planning this time of year. Do you remember Mark Bittman's column for the New York Times called The Minimalist? It was one of my favorite things, and I also very much enjoyed the videos that would accompany each column where Mark Bittman was cooking in a New York City style kitchen. Nothing fancy, nothing extravagant. He was using the techniques that he wrote about in his column. I miss that so much. I know it was somewhat confining to keep working toward this minimalist vein, and he wanted to branch out and think about and write about other things. But those recipes and those videos were very important to my development and my culinary skill. This week, I was thinking about one of the recipes I used to make quite frequently, and I haven't made it in a while. And I posted a link to it in the show notes on yarns@yinhu.com because it works beautifully with August and nuts from the Bulk Bins cook-along. It's called Lemon Almond Pan Tart. This is a dish that works as breakfast. It can also work as brunch or even an elegant dessert. It's just the perfect combination of custard and lemon flavor, and with a little bit of body that ground almonds give it. So I posted a link to the recipe, but essentially it's eggs, cream or milk, grated lemon rind and lemon juice, and then almonds two ways: ground almonds, very finely ground, almost like a flour, and then blanched almond slices. You whisk together the ingredients in a thin batter, get that batter started in a small skillet on the cooktop, and then bake it in the oven and finish it under the broiler and top it with powdered sugar. Outstanding dish. Can't say enough about this dish. I love it, and when I made it for breakfast a few mornings ago, Samuel said, "Oh yeah, I forgot about this. We really like this. We haven't had it in a while." So I encourage you to give it a try and to think about other ways you can use nuts during the month of August for the Bulk Bins cook-along. Finally, for Ever Expanding Skill Set, I have a brief interview to share with you, and it's with my favorite interview subject, my mom. I've been trying to convince her that I needed her voice on the podcast and that she would be brilliant and a natural. And I've tried several times, unsuccessfully, to get mom on the podcast. But this week I went over and we did a bunch of canning in her kitchen, and I was able to talk her into 7 minutes. That's what I said. I think it ended up being about 9 minutes or so. I have this interview to share with you, and I'd also like to make a brief mention of the title of this week's episode, which is Putting Food By. When I was growing up, this is the way mom always referred to any kind of food preservation. Nowadays, people mention canning, they also mention jarring, or they just mention the specific product they're making, like pickling or making jam and so on. But the way mom talked about it, she would always say, put by. And that was the expression that she used for putting things in jars and also freezing vegetables and fruits in the freezer, because she also did a great deal of freezing of foods when I was growing up. And I found mom's copy. We were looking through different cookbooks and things when I was visiting, and I found mom's copy of Putting Food By, which is the reference book I always remember her using in the kitchen when we were canning things in the summer. It has no front cover, no back cover, and even the spine is starting to flake off. It's tenuous at best. So this is a well-loved copy of her favorite reference book. And I just thought that was a suitable title for this week's episode. So I'm very pleased to share with you a brief conversation that I had with Mom about canning. And my hope is that this is just the beginning of future brief interviews with Mom. I'd love to get her to talk more in depth about the subject of pies. See if I can get that to happen. I think this first round went pretty well. If you enjoy it, I hope you will write in and say so that I can share that feedback with her and maybe use it as encouragement for future interviews.
Hi, Mom. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's been fun canning with you today.
Good. I'm going to ask the first question that I ask of all my interview subjects. On a scale of 1 to 10, how prepared are you for the apocalypse?
I'll put myself in the middle at a 5.
A 5? What makes you a 5?
I don't know. I think I have a lot of stuff on hand, and I know how to do stuff, cook with what I have. So I think I'm good.
Well, we've been canning in your kitchen in Hunterdon County today, and what have we been canning?
Well, we started with cooking some beets down. We're not sure what we're going to do with them yet. And we actually didn't can, but we steamed beans for freezing. And then we started on tomatoes. We made salsa, and we made a great tomato sauce. So that's in the canner right now, working its way through.
And then we couldn't leave well enough alone, so we got out a head of red cabbage.
Yes, we did. And we're making some sweet and sour cabbage with some onion in it. And it smells great.
So some of my first memories, I don't know if you know this, are of being in the kitchen and being around when you were working on canning. I'm curious, how did you learn how to do food preservation?
Well, my mom did some, in all fairness. She did some, but she didn't do a whole lot. So a lot of it was just by trying things, trial and error. Starting, I guess, probably with simple things like jam, which, you know, is basically just a fruit and a sugar, maybe taking seeds out and thickening. Not as big a project as canning. And I think probably I did learn the technique and some of the organization from my mother, I have to say. My grandmother did a little bit. She was more into fresh things than what I can say my mom, and being a little more on the healthy side of what she was doing.
So your father's mother taught you a lot about cooking and food, but she didn't really have the facilities to do a lot of canning. Yeah. So organization and stuff you got from Graham. How old were you when you started taking on food preservation all by yourself? Were you still at home as a teenager when you would do some things?
No, I think that was probably working with either my sisters or my mom, probably not all by myself. Actually, canning all by yourself is sometimes hard because if you have some, it takes so long. There's a lot of steps, and if you have to do every step yourself, it can be discouraging. That's why I suggest making something like a jelly first. That's not so many steps. So, the other thing is having the equipment, is knowing what you need to do it. I did a lot of early canning when I was young. First starting a family with a neighbor who knew nothing about it and learned from me, but there was extra hands. So it made it simpler and more fun.
So a lot of people are growing small gardens these days, and people are very excited about shopping at a farmer's market or joining a CSA, and they're a little apprehensive about canning. So what would you say to someone who was curious but hadn't really done it yet. You would urge them to start with jams or jellies.
And maybe the other thing would be pickling. Okay. Because, I don't know, things won't spoil as easily pickled. You could even do refrigerator. Not actually putting it up, but putting it in the refrigerator. There's a lot of recipes for that today. It might be a good way to start, and then once you realize you can do it and you can make it, then putting it into jars and keeping it. The other thing is you taste something and you really like it. Some things you end up canning and you really don't care for, you don't eat that much of. So you find out what it is you really desire, and also what you're growing, what's growing well this year, whether you're buying or whether it's in your garden, and then pick from that to can.
What about someone who is a little more experienced with canning? What are some tips or tricks coming from someone very experienced? You've been doing this for a very long time and have canned not just in a water bath canning, which is what we're doing today, but you've also canned things with a pressure cooker. What are some tips or tricks that you can offer that might not be readily apparent to someone who's still a beginner?
Well, I still think the equipment, having your equipment and all your supplies lined up. And once you decide you're going to have a canning day or you're going to can a couple days in a week, get a lot together and do it. Because once you pull all your pots and stuff out, it goes a lot faster than if you have to clean up each time. There is a lot of cleanup with it. And maybe preparing even some of the items ahead of time. Like if you have fruit, washing it. Or tomatoes, washing it, washing them, chopping something that's going to go in, so that when you get started, it just flows better. And I don't know, you feel, you continue to do it when you see you're accomplishing a lot. It feels good. And then you tend to experiment, too, once you have all your supplies out, you know, and see what else you have around. Okay, what can I do? So
what's
fun.
One of your biggest accomplishments in canning? Is it quantity? Is it like an unusual recipe? Or what's something that you felt was like either an aha moment or you felt really accomplished?
Well, the one thing, I got a steamer where you could steam the juices out of fruits and vegetables, which was really big because you could take huge quantities, since I had an orchard with lots of fruits, and first started just juicing in order to drink the juice, and then after a while I decided I could make wines and do other things with that juice, vinegars, whatever. And that steamer really made a big difference in what I could do. Dripping things through a jelly bag or whatever is so time consuming and you seem to waste. So I think that was huge, getting that steamer. Actually, an old German lady gave me one, and then since then I've gotten a really nice stainless steel one, which I love.
I think that's a good tip too, is especially if someone is not sure if they really want to commit themselves to this, is to look for things at tag sales or yard sales. So you're not putting out a lot of money necessarily to get started because, you know, it might not be for you, or you might not have your garden for a very long time. And if you can accrue things inexpensively, then.
Yeah, I would say that if you're starting to can, that you might ask around, because there's a lot of people have the supplies, and maybe as they get older, they don't want to do it anymore and they're very glad to offer it and even to teach you some. Maybe they work with you a little bit and teach you. There's definitely something about really doing a lot of it that puts knowledge in your head that you don't even know until someone watches you and realizes how you line everything up and how you feel, how you clean. Cleanliness is a huge part of it. I didn't mention that before, but it's huge.
I have to make sure things are sterile.
Yeah, or else, you know, you'll have. And also knowing when things are sealed like that. So, and knowing what you... fooling a little bit with tasting so that you get it just the way you want it, or thickness of sauces or whatever, salsa.
We're about to chow down on a little more of that, I think. Thanks for talking with me today, Mom.
You're welcome, sweetie.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. August 16th is the Yarns at Yinhu Podiversary, 1 year podcasting. If you just started listening, or if you've been listening for a long time, I hope you will consider leaving a rating or a review on iTunes or introducing yourself on the Ravelry Introductions page. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Kurt sings, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.